Chapter 50. Maeve hugged Pitt. You couldn't have arrived at a more opportune moment. How come you didn't blast away with your little pop gun? Asked Giordino. Pitt pulled the tiny automatic out of his back pocket and held it in the palm of his hand. After the guard with the flashlight failed to find me hiding in a crevasse, I waited a minute and then pulled myself up to the edge of the cliff to see what was happening. When I saw you were within an instant of being shot, there was no time to draw an aim. So I did the next best thing. Lucky he did, Maeve said to Giordino, or you wouldn't be here. Giordino was not one to display maudlin sentiment. Next chance I get, I'll carry out his trash. He glanced down at the guard who was writhing on the ground in the fetal position, clutching his abdomen. He picked up the M16 and checked the ammo clip. A nice addition to our arsenal. What do we do with him? Asked Maeve. Chuck him over the cliff? Nothing so drastic, answered Pitt. Instinctively, he glanced in both directions along the path leading along the ledge. He can't hurt us now. Better to gag and tie him up and leave him for his buddies to find. When he and his partner don't show up to check in at the next guard station, they're certain to come searching for them. The next patrol won't show up for another 50 minutes, said Giordino, rapidly pulling the nylon line over the cliff's edge onto the path. Time enough for a good head start. Minutes later, the guard, his eyes wide with fright and clothed only in his underwear, hung in space from the grappling hook, 10 meters below the rim of the cliff top. The nylon line was wrapped around his body tightly like a cocoon. With Maeve as a guide, they set off along the cliff path. Giordino packed the diminutive automatic pistol, while Pitt, now clad in the guard's uniform, carried the Bushmaster M16. They no longer felt exposed and helpless. Irrational, Pitt knew, for there must have been no less than 100 other security guards standing watch over the mines and the island's shoreline. That wasn't the worst of their problems. Now that there was no returning to the marvelous Maeve, they would have to seek other means of transport, a plan Pitt had always held in the back of his mind without the foggiest notion of how to carry it out. That wasn't a primary concern just yet. What mattered now was finding Maeve's boys and stealing them out of the hands of their crazy grandfather. After traveling about 500 meters, Maeve held up a hand and gestured into the thick underbrush. "We'll cross the island here," she informed them. "A road curves to within 30 meters of where we stand. If we are careful and remain out of sight of any traffic, we can follow the road into the central housing area for Dorset employees." "Where are we in relation to the volcanoes that anchor each end of the island?" asked Pitt. "We're about halfway between and opposite the lagoon." "Where do you think your boys might be held?" Giordino put to her. "I wish I knew," she said distantly. "My first guess is the manor house. But I wouldn't put it past my father to keep them under guard in the security compound, or worse, they're kept by Jack Ferguson." "Not a good idea to wander around like tourists looking for a restaurant," said Pitt. "I'm with you," Giordino agreed. "The proper thing to do is find someone in authority with the answers and twist his arm." Pitt fastidiously straightened the jacket of his stolen uniform and brushed off the shoulders. "If he's on the island, I know just the man." 20 minutes later, after traveling over a road that wound in a series of hairpin turns over the spine of the island, they approached the compound that housed the mining engineers and the security guards. Keeping in the sheltered gloom of the underbrush, they skirted the detention camp for the Chinese laborers. Bright lights illuminated the barracks and open grounds, surrounded by a high electrified fence that was topped by rows of circular razor wire. The area was so heavily secured by electronic surveillance systems that no guards were walking around the perimeter. In another 100 meters, Maeve stopped and gestured for Pitt and Giordino to drop behind a low hedge that bordered a concrete thoroughfare. One end of the road ended at a driveway that passed through a large arched gate to the Dorset family manor house. A short distance in the opposite direction, the road split. One broad avenue trailed down a slope to the port in the center of the lagoon, where the docks and warehouses reflected a weird appearance under the eerie yellow glow of sodium vapor lamps. Pitt took an extra minute to study the big boat tied beside the dock. Even at this distance, there was no mistaking the Dorset yacht. Pitt was especially pleased to see a helicopter sitting on the upper deck. "Does the island have an airstrip?" he asked Maeve. She shook her head. "Daddy refused to construct one, preferring all his transportation by sea. He uses a helicopter to carry him back and forth from the Australian mainland. Why do you want to know?" "A process of elimination. Our getaway bird sits yonder on the yacht," Pitt said. "You clever man, you had that in mind all along." "I was merely swept up in an orgy of inspiration," Pitt said artfully, then asked, "How many men guard the yacht?"
"Only one, who monitors the dock security systems."
"And the crewman?"
"Whenever the boat is docked at the island, Daddy requires the crew to stay in quarters ashore."
Pitt took note that the other fork in the road curved toward the main compound. The mines inside the volcanoes were alive with activity, but the central area of the Dorset Consolidated Mining Community was deserted. The dock beside the yacht appeared totally deserted under the floodlights mounted on a nearby warehouse. Everyone else, it seemed, was asleep in bed, a not uncommon circumstance at 4 o'clock in the morning.
"Point out the chief of security's house," Pitt said to Maeve. "The mining engineers and my father's servants live in the cluster of buildings closest to the lagoon," answered Maeve. "The house you want sits on the southeast corner of the security guard's compound. Its walls are painted gray."
"I see it." Pitt drew a sleeve across his forehead to wipe away the sweat.
"Is there a way to reach it other than the road?" "A walkway runs along the rear."
"Let's get moving. We don't have a whole lot of time before daylight." They stayed in the shadows behind the hedge and the neatly trimmed trees that stretched alongside the paved shoulders of the road. Tall street lights were spaced every 50 meters, the same as most city streets. Except for the soft rustle of wild grass and scattered leaves beneath their feet, the three of them moved quietly toward the gray house at the corner of the compound. When they reached a clump of bushes outside the rear door, Pitt put his mouth to Maeve's ear.
"Have you ever been inside the house before?" "Only once or twice when I was a little girl, and Daddy asked me to deliver a message to the man who headed his security a long time ago," she replied in a soft murmur.
"Can you say whether the house has an alarm system to detect intruders?"
Maeve shook her head. "I can't imagine who would want to break into the security chief's diggings."
"Any live-in help?"
"They're housed in a different compound."
"The back door it is," Pitt whispered.
"I hope we find a well-stocked kitchen," muttered Giordino.
"I'm not comfortable sneaking around in the dark on an empty stomach. A very empty stomach, I might add."
"You can have first crack at the refrigerator," Pitt promised.
Pitt stepped out of the shadows and slipped up to one side of the back door and peered through a window. The interior was lit only by a dim light over a hallway that ended at a stairwell leading to the second floor. Cautiously, he reached over and gently twisted the latch. There was a barely audible click as the shaft slipped from its catch. He took a deep breath and cracked the door ever so slightly. It swung on its hinges noiselessly, so he pushed it wide open and stepped into a rear entryway that opened into a small kitchen. He stepped across the kitchen and quietly closed a sliding door leading to a hallway. Then he turned on the light. At the signal, Maeve and Giordino followed him in.
"Oh, thank you, God," muttered Giordino in ecstasy at seeing a beautifully decorated kitchen over whose counters and oven hung expensive cooking utensils fit for a gourmet chef.
"Warm air," Maeve whispered happily. "I haven't felt warm air in weeks."
"I can taste the ham and eggs already," said Giordino.
"First things first," Pitt said quietly.
Turning the light out again, he slipped the hallway door open, leveled the assault rifle, and stepped into the hallway. He cocked his head and listened, hearing only the soft noise of a heater fan. Flattening himself against the wall, he moved along the hallway under the muted light before starting up the carpeted stairway, testing each step for a squeak before setting his weight on it.
At the landing at the top of the stairs, he found two closed doors, one on either side. He tried the one to his right. The room was furnished as a private office with computer, telephones, and file cabinets. The desk was incredibly orderly and free of clutter, the same as the kitchen. Pitt smiled to himself. He expected no less from the inhabitant. Sure of himself now, he stepped over to the left door, kicked it open, and switched on the light. A beautiful Asian girl, no more than 18, with long black silken hair falling over the side of the bed to the floor, stared in bulging-eyed fright at the figure standing in the doorway with an assault rifle. She opened her mouth as if to scream, but emitted a muted gurgling sound. The man next to her was a cool customer. He lay on his side, eyes closed, and made no attempt to turn and look at Pitt. Pitt would have missed the fractional movement but for the apparent indifference of the man. He lightly pulled the trigger, sending two quick shots into the pillow. The muzzle blast was muffled by the gun's suppressor and came like a pair of hand claps. Only then did the man in bed bolt upright and stare at a hand that was bleeding from a bullet through the palm. Now the girl shrieked, but neither man seemed to care. They both waited patiently until she froze into silence. "Good morning, Chief," said Pitt cheerfully. "Sorry to inconvenience you." John Merchant blinked in the light and focused his eyes on his intruder. "My guards will have heard the screams and come on the run," he said calmly. "I doubt that. Knowing you, I should judge that feminine screams coming from your living quarters are considered a nightly occurrence by your neighbors. Who are you? What do you want?" How quickly they forget. Merchant squinted, and then his mouth dropped open in recognition. His face registered abject disbelief. "You can't be. You can't be. Dirk Pitt." Giordino came into the room. They stood there behind Pitt, saying nothing, looking at the two people in bed as if watching a staged drama. "This has to be a night," asked. "Do you bleed in your dreams?" asked Chief, was reaching for and throwing it to Giordino. Any little man would come around to accepting the situation. But Merchant was too stunned at seeing the ghosts of three people he thought were dead. "I saw you cast adrift with my own eyes before the storm struck," Merchant said in a dull monotone. "How is it possible you all survived?" "We were swallowed by a whale," said Giordino, pulling the window curtains closed. "We upset his tummy, and you can guess what happened next." "You people are crazy. Give up your weapons. You'll never get off the island alive." Pitt placed the muzzle of his assault rifle against Merchant's forehead. "The only words I want to hear from you concern the location of Miss Fletcher's sons. Where are they?" A spark of defiance gleamed in Merchant's eyes. "I won't tell you anything." "Then you will surely die," said Pitt coldly. Strange words from a marine engineer and an oceanographer. A man who sets women and children on a pedestal, and who is respected for his word and integrity.
"I applaud your homework."
"You won't kill me," said Merchant, regaining control of his emotions. "You are not a professional assassin, nor a man who has the stomach for murder." Pitt gave a casual shrug. "I'd venture to say that one of your guards, the one I threw over the cliffs about half an hour ago, would disagree." Merchant stared at Pitt impassively, not certain whether to believe him. "I do not know what Mr. Dorset has done with his grandsons." Pitt moved the rifle barrel from Merchant's head to one knee. Maeve, count to three. "One," she began, as composed as if she were counting lumps of sugar in a cup of tea. "Two. Three." Pitt pulled the trigger, and a bullet smashed through Merchant's kneecap. Merchant's mistress went into another fit of screaming until Giordino clamped his hand over her mouth. "Can we please have some quiet? You're cracking the plaster." A complete transformation came over Merchant. The evil malignity of the repellent little man was suddenly replaced with a demeanor marked by pain and terror. His mouth twisted as he spoke.
"My knee! You shattered my knee!" he rasped in horror.
Pitt placed the muzzle against one of Merchant's elbows. "I'm in a hurry. Unless you wish to be doubly maimed, I suggest you speak. And speak the truth, or you'll have a tough time brushing your teeth from now on."
Miss Fletcher's sons work in the mines with the other laborers. They're kept with the others in the guarded camp.
Pitt turned to Maeve. It's your call.
Maeve looked into Merchant's eyes, her face taut with emotion.
He's lying.
Jack Ferguson, my father's overseer, is in charge of the boys. They would never be out of his sight.
Where does he hang out? Asked Giorgino.
Ferguson lives in a guest house beside the mansion so he can be at my father's beck and call, said Maeve.
Pitt smiled coldly at Merchant. Sorry, John, wrong answer. That will cost you an elbow.
No, please no,
Merchant muttered through teeth clenched from the pain.
You win. The twins are kept in Ferguson's quarters when they're not working in the mines.
Maeve stepped forward until she was standing over Merchant, distraught and grieved at envisioning the suffering her sons were enduring. Her self-control crumbled as she slapped him sharply, several times across the face.
6-year-old boys forced to work in the mines. What kind of sadistic monsters are you?
Giordino wrapped his arms gently around Maeve's waist and pulled her back into the center of the room as she broke into anguished sobbing. Pitt's face reflected sorrow and anger. He moved the muzzle to within a millimeter of Merchant's left eye.
One more question, friend John. Where sleeps the helicopter's pilot?
He's in the mining company's medical clinic with a broken arm, Merchant answered sullenly. You can forget about forcing him to fly you from the island.
Pitt nodded and smiled knowingly at Giordino.
Who needs him?
He looked about the room and nodded toward the closet. We'll leave them in there.
Do you intend to murder us?
Asked Merchant slowly.
I'd sooner shoot skunks, Pitt pointed out.
But since you brought it up, you and your little friend will be tied up, gagged, and locked in the closet. Merchant's fear was obvious from the tick at one corner of his mouth.
We'll suffocate in there.
I can shoot you both now. Take your pick.
Merchant said no more and offered no resistance as he and the girl were bound with the bed sheets torn into strips and unceremoniously dumped into the closet. Giordino moved half the furniture in the bedroom against the door to keep it from being forced open from the inside.
We've got what we came for, said Pitt. Let's be on our way to the old homestead.
You said I could raid the refrigerator, protested Giordino. My stomach is going through rejection pains.
No time for that now, said Pitt. You can gorge later.
Giordino shook his head sorrowfully as he stuffed Merchant's 9mm automatic inside his belt.
Why do I feel as though there's a conspiracy afoot to deplete my body sugar?